welcome to the Albion Raw Extra Time with me, Alan Wares. Now, it's Women's Football Weekend, you know, with the men just all disappearing across Europe and injuring themselves. Then it's the focus on the women this weekend. I think it was something that fell under the radar a little bit, but the Albion have got themselves a new women's and girls general manager. And I'm delighted to say she joins us on the Albion Raw now. Welcome, Polly Bancroft. Polly, how are you?
Thank you very much, Alan. Yeah, really nice to be here. Doing very well. Spending a lot of time indoors, like everybody at the moment. But no, great to be here. Thank you.
Fabulous. So, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got to talk about you because I'm reading your CV. I've actually got the LinkedIn page up, actually, and it's a very long, impressive CV, and we'll go through that in a sec. First and foremost, I mean, you've just joined the Albion in the last, month or so. So, how did you get the gig?
Well, saw the advert, like most people, I would imagine. But I think probably a combination of being involved with another football club in the East Midlands. Nottingham Forest.
Okay.
I was a board member at for Nottingham Forest Women. So I think that combination of having experience working in another club previously, but then also having various other roles in football. I've most recently moved from Switzerland at UEFA, and prior to that was with the FA and then three county FAs as well. So I think having a lot of experience of working in football organisations and balancing that with club football as well. Stood me in good stead for this role.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that, like I say, the CV, you've just given it a brief overview there, but and we can see why the Albion would love to have you on board. But what attracted you to the Albion in the first place? I mean, was it the fact that you know that it's a Premier League club, and well, there's the women in the Super League, obviously, or was it just, you know, you fancied a change of scenery?
It's a good question. I think primarily, women's football in England is flying so high. Like, it's absolutely at the forefront of development. And I think from a social perspective, to try and get ultimate equality for women in the game, that was certainly something that drew me to it. Obviously, being a Premier League and Women's Super League club has massive potential and huge opportunity there to grow, along with the area as well. So trying to get to know the South Downs and I suppose the liberal element of Brighton as a city. So I think there was a whole host of reasons that attracted me and my family to the area. But I think certainly working at a club that is so proactive and open-minded about the development of women's football, and not just the women's first team either, but the whole pathway for women and girls was something that really attracted me to it.
Did you have an inkling of that before you applied?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the values that the club hold are so evident, and that was really present throughout my whole interview process as well. You know, often they can be a footnote, you know, or at the bottom of a website, just words, but they were really present throughout the whole process, and the club really hold themselves to those as well. And I think that was really clear on both the men's and the women's side throughout lockdown, and the precedents that the club set for maintaining staff, donating food to the local community, those kinds of things. So yeah, a real community club, which is aligned to my values as well.
So you've been here, what, 3 or 4 weeks? So how have you feel you've got your feet under the table?
Yeah, I think 6 or so now. It's good. Yeah, really good. I think I've probably overshot myself somewhat with setting up loads of meetings. So I'm you know, flying here, there and everywhere in between
radio
Zoom calls and face-to-faces, yeah, that's it. But because the role is so broad and there are so many stakeholders involved as well, so the county FA, schools, grassroots clubs, you know, are absolutely vital and imperative to the work that we do, particularly when fans are allowed back as well. So, yeah, a lot of time spent, you know, an important time spent liaising with those.
Give us an overview, if you can. I don't know if it's easy to give a an example of your day-to-day working, but give us an overview of what you've been asked to do by the club.
Day-to-day, it's operational responsibilities within the club for women's football. So that's trying to identify and develop further integration opportunities for women's football. So whether that's in commercial, communications, marketing, it's to really try and look at the off-field support that I can help to assist the women's first team manager, and then down the pathway as well for our dual career academy and our regional talent club as well. So I suppose it's a leadership role with strategic development. I'm also responsible for the FA license. So we have various license criteria to meet to maintain our status in the Women's Super League. And I'm the main contact for women's football at the club as well.
Good. Yeah. I mean, we've heard the phrase pathway sort of bandied about quite a lot. We've got a sort of rough idea, and I think your predecessor Kirsty certainly talked about it. But you know, with you, what does the pathway mean for the women and girls game, certainly at the Albion?
Yeah, that means that we are providing elite opportunities to develop the very best talent from the region. Mm-hmm. So our youngest age group is under 11s, and we go through right until the women's first team. So it's making sure that there are steps in place to ensure that players have development opportunities in an elite environment, and they can quite comfortably step from under 11s to 12s, 12s to 14s and onwards. And I think that starts really at the base by making sure that we are liaising well with grassroots charter standard clubs to make sure that the best players are aware of the opportunities that we have. Same with colleges and universities as well, to make sure that players can study and get educational background as well as their performance as well. So it's making sure that we are identifying the right players, that our offer is the most suitable for them. And that's a holistic approach. So that's making sure that their well-being and there's psychological support there available for them, medical support. And so it's a real holistic package for girls from the ages of 9, 10, all the way up to seniors.
So with the start of the pathway, is it your responsibility, or do you have talent spotters who will go out and spot the young talent from whatever the starting age? What is the starting age for girls at Lancing?
So at the moment it's under 11s. Last season it was under 10s, but we decided to retain the existing players because of lockdown. So really sort of 9, 10 years old are the youngest age groups that we would.
So how do you go about spotting those talent? Is it your job? Do you have talent spotters, or is it those who come to you? How does it work at the very youngest age, when they start out?
Yeah, so we have scouts that would go and watch players. Certainly when we're at the first team, we'd look slightly further afield than for the younger age groups. But yeah, we have people that would do that for us.
Sure, because I mean, when we're on social media and we talk to fellow Brighton fans, and there's a lot of friends and colleagues and what have you have daughters, at the age of sort of six. I've got a niece myself who's 9, who's an absolutely manic Albion fan. Now, whether she's actually going to sort of sign up for a football team, I don't know, or whatever it is she likes to do. But the point is that, is the Albion really the only sort of major opportunity, or do you actually work with girls' clubs, or is it the case that at that age, at 9, 10, 11, it's actually boys and girls together? How does that work with when the club reaches out to the community that way?
Well, our two youngest age groups, so the under 11s and under 12s, actually play in mixed or boys' leagues, essentially. So, we would ensure that they're coming up against strong opposition for their age. We're really keen on making sure that those girls are playing other sports still at that age group, to make sure that they've got picking up holistic physical skills. There are other clubs within the county, so Lewis, for example, that are playing in the Championship, so the league below the Women's Super League, that also have pathways in place. As I said, we would liaise with the leagues. My predecessor Kirsty would have gone to have spoken to the league about the opportunities that take place within the club. To see if clubs either want to signpost players to us. In the past, we've done open trials as well, so girls can come and try out for some of our age groups. So there's a lot of outreach work that goes on. Also, Albion in the community, so the charity arm of the club, are contacting thousands of players on a yearly basis. So that's also good outreach for us to spot talent.
So when you're starting out with the 9, 10, 11-year-olds and they start on, I mean, what you're saying, it's the under-11s is the youngest age group this year, and then the pathway. And the pathway is obviously going to be nurturing, in your case, the women's or the girls as they're growing older. But are you responsible for their education as well, or is that something that you have to do with their school? Or how does that work as they go through the years into, more into maturity?
Yes, so while they're in the RTC, so the Regional Talent Club, obviously their education is of utmost priority. So the training sessions are scheduled around their education. When they move into the Dual Career Academy, that's where it becomes more of a hybrid approach. So the education tries to fit around the football, so it's almost vice versa. But we are really working hard with the FA to provide various different schemes for those players to go on. And we're proud to be able to offer a football offer for those sort of 16 to 20-year-old girls that fits around what they want to do. So if that's a BTEC, A-level or work experience, then that's something that we're proud to be able to offer, this flexible offer for those slightly older girls, because not everybody wants to do the same course alongside football.
And I guess also once that happens and they get to the end of the pathway and they get to the end of the... was it the RTC you called it? Once they get to the end of that, it's certainly something that was raised in the men's game, and I assume that the Albion is kind of progressive thinking enough that if a young woman doesn't actually make the grade whilst they're in the junior programs, that there's also the kind of, I suppose you want to call it, aftercare, when they say, look, thanks but no thanks, and here's what you can do next with your career. So you're actually involved in the next career change once they've been asked to leave the club.
Yeah, that's right. There are quite a few schemes around that we are actively seeking to make sure that all of our players have got options as and when they leave football. And that might be early retirement through injury. It might be natural retirement, or it might be something that they want to do alongside their football as well as a dual career. So we're really keen to make sure that the players are set up for life and that they use football as a vehicle to support that.
Now, is this a role that you've actually undertaken before? You said at the top of the show that you were a director at Nottingham Forest, within the women's group within Forest. Now, what you're doing here, is this something you've done before?
First time as a full-time member of staff at a football club. So lots to learn, steep learning curve. But I think with my role at UEFA, I've been able to apply a lot of that. So at UEFA, I was helping 55 national associations develop their women's football. So that was writing strategies, increasing their marketing, trying to look at how we can commercialise the game, improve communications, those kinds of things. So I've been able to apply that experience now on an operational level.
Well, I'm actually looking. Well, you can't see my screen, and my screen has got obviously you on the Zoom, and for our listener, obviously on Radio Reverb, we're doing our interviews on Zoom these days, thanks to lockdown. And actually, just under that is your LinkedIn page, and the one phrase that comes up here, it says UEFA B license. So not only are you operational, you're a coach as well.
Yep, that's right. So, well, as a very much amateur player, before I got, I suppose, so developed in my career, I was trying to balance playing, coaching and working. This was when I was at a county FA, and I think there came a time where I couldn't do all of that and also try and support and watch football and still enjoy it. So something had to go, and it was the coaching side, the technical side.
So if you say amateur, how far did your playing career progress?
I have, I think, one or possibly two appearances in what was the top league. It was called the Premier League, I think, at the time, but I would have been 16, 17, playing for Ilkeston Town Ladies.
Okay.
But I've also played for Nottingham Forest, for Guiseley, for Leeds Met University. So,
because you've joined the Albion at the time where the Lancing Training Ground has been expanded. I mean, actually, tell us about, we've heard it from other people, but let's hear it from you. Tell us about your first thoughts of when you first turned up at Lancing.
It's mega. It's absolutely mega. Like, to be able to see the investment from the club, it's so clean. It looks amazing. So to have that facility for our current players, but also prospective players as well, to say, look at the investment that the club is making into men's, women's, boys and girls football. You know, you couldn't wish for any better facilities, and it'll be the absolute best in the country when it's open. So we're super excited to get in there.
Yeah, we had Tony Bloom on probably about a year ago, and he promised that it would be ready. I guess obviously lockdown and COVID and everything has made a big dent on this, but he promised it would be ready by the start of the new season. Obviously, you know, the start of the new season was obviously going to be flexible, but Does this mean at the moment, until such time it's ready, you're still up at the Sussex University?
Yes, yeah, that's right. And the stadium as well.
Are you actually training in there, are you?
Yeah, so we're using the gym and some of the rehab pools in the stadium, but then the pitch based at the university.
So how long before you can move back into Lancing then?
Just as soon as it's open, really. So I think the date keeps changing, but I think we may have started our next season before we're in.
Really? Come on, Tony, you're dragging your feet.
I mean, it's so out of our hands, isn't it, with lockdown too. You know, it's really hard to say. So I don't blame them whatsoever for a fluid date.
Well, there is that, I guess. But, you know, hey, the workmen are working outside. You know, you're not going to catch... Moan. I'll have a word with Tony. Come on, you know, get your skates on. So a bit about you. Now, know a lot about you. I'm looking at your LinkedIn page, and it's a list of qualifications that would I think sort of like shame at an Oxford University don. So you've got you volunteer. You were a director at Nottingham Forest until very recently. So I mean, bearing in mind that Forest is your home club, was that quite a wrench to come away from there?
It was done remotely, actually, while I was in Switzerland at UEFA, and it was just a really nice opportunity to support the club that I grew up watching, and use the knowledge and experience that I've picked up from the FA, from UEFA, and apply it within my hometown club. So, still obviously follow the results, and I've got my little boy, a little kit, alongside an Albion kit as well. So there's still certainly an emotional attachment there.
There's an emotional attachment with a lot of the Albion fans, obviously with Chris Hughton being there. I mean, that must be a little bit weird. You think, you know, one wouldn't, you know, sort of, you know, be too ashamed if you didn't have split loyalties. I mean, I assume that if Brighton ever play Forest, then, you know, you're going to have Forest in your heart, aren't you?
I mean, let's hope it takes place in the Premier League, for starters.
Absolutely.
And there's very little chance of that happening right now. So
Chris Hughton, then I think that your chances have actually just gone sort of, you know, as you put it, mega. So, I think that, you know, there's every chance he's do that. And I think that, you know, your fellow Forest fans, I think, are genuinely excited about him being here. And obviously, we wish him all the best at Forest as
Thank
well.
You. Well, he'll manage to do something. I think it's 22 years since the Premier League, so.
Been a while. I mean, that's the thing about Forest is when I started watching football in the late 70s, you know, obviously Forest were champions of Europe. We had Brian Clough, who was rubbish at Brighton, but, you know, we had Brian Clough. And, you know, Forest were, even though I suppose at the time considered a little bit of a provincial club, they end up being champions of Europe. And so, you know, I think there's a part of certainly my generation can see them as being a big club. And, you know, your classic phrase of sleeping giant. I mean, it is about time that they got back to the Premier League, is it not?
Let's hope so.
So you...
Well, it was nice to see a picture of Brian Clough inside the stadium. That was quite a nice warm feeling.
Yeah, the Amex, yeah. Yeah, got you. That's a good opportunity to point you towards Spencer Vignes's book, Bloody Southerners, about Clough and Taylor's time at the Albion and how we were introduced to the players. There's many books available for Christmas. We'll be talking about one on the main show this week, but always happy to plug Spencer's book. Now then, Polly, back to your credentials. You've got a lot of diplomas from the University of Lausanne. That's kind of posh, isn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah,
They're education courses that are run by UEFA, so obviously with them being in Switzerland in Neon, it's their education partner, and 20 kilometres up the road in Lausanne, so it's probably a natural fit, even if it sounds fancy. But yeah, I did a certificate and a diploma in football management.
Sure. So, you know, you mentioned about your role helping out 50, I mean, that's the mind-boggling thing, is 55, you know, national FA bodies, women's bodies, helping them to promote the game. And this is all from within the doors of UEFA, was it?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So we'd cover countries as far east as Kazakhstan, west to Portugal, up to Iceland, Faroe Islands, and down to Malta, Italy, and Greece. So the whole gambit.
So in that case, and again, puff yourself up a little bit. How was it when you started and how was it when you left then? What state did you leave that particular role in?
Well, I started actually on a loan deal from the FA, working in their on their women's football unit. Yeah, that's right. Well, it was. It was a loan deal for 1 year. And then they offered me the opportunity to stay. And I quite liked the skiing and the lake and those kinds of things. So, yeah, thought, why not? Sure. And at that time, I was living in Leeds. And I thought, you know what? Leeds to Neon. Okay, I'll take that. So, yeah, it was originally a loan deal. And then I moved from the women's unit into the business development unit. And at the time, it was to help work on just increasing participation for women and girls within the national associations. And I spread my role from just participation to working in other areas of the game that I mentioned earlier. So strategy, marketing, brand, communications, commercial. So that the team, when I left, was offering a full service or a full menu of services to the national associations that weren't just focusing on strategic development for, say, the men's game, but would consider women's football as well. So sort of integrating women's football into a business support to 55 federations, I feel like that's a legacy that I'm proud to leave, knowing that, you know, my former colleagues will now be helping federations develop their women's football.
So yeah, a lot of people did watch the Women's European Championships and really enjoyed it. So how much of that work was yours? How much was, you know, we could see your fingerprints over that?
I did a little bit on the legacy. So working with the Netherlands to try and make sure that hosting that competition had sustained effect, and really looking forward then to Euro 2022 and my role now at Brighton, who are also a host city. That goes hand in hand as well. So I'm already involved with the legacy groups here to make sure that we think ahead to, you know, this time in 2022, so October, November, if we're looking back to say, okay, we held the tournament 2 or 3 months ago, what have we achieved? And if that's an increase in fans coming to watch the women at Crawley, or more people playing, or more female referees, then we'll have done a good job. So it's to try and look forward and past the tournament to work out, what does success look like and how have we achieved that?
Because we're still, I mean, obviously it was originally 2021 and it's obviously everything's been pushed back 1 year. I mean, it's something I was actually really looking forward to for next summer, but, you know, we can wait for another year. But even from 2 years out or 18 months out, when Brighton hosted the Rugby World Cup and then we had that moment where Japan beat South Africa, believe me, the club milked it for all it was worth. So with that in mind, is what kind of legacy do you think the women's football, but specifically the women's football at Brighton, could achieve?
I think the whole of Europe, if not wider, and the world will have their eyes on Brighton throughout that tournament, which is a massive opportunity. And whilst it will be two international teams playing a few matches at the Amex, to try and make sure that the people coming to watch that game are aware of where the women's team play at Crawley, the players are, how to access tickets, how to get to the ground. It's some of the basic things that people might not know that we need to make sure are really obvious, so they don't just go to a one-off game, a showpiece game, and think, you know, that's it. But actually they're really invested. They see the high quality product that women's football is now, and they get invested in it and want to continue their support. So really, for me and my role is to try and make sure that we increase attendances for the women's first team. Obviously, if people are then interested to play, coach, referee, volunteer, then that's great as well. We will have a funded post with Albion in the community, and that funded role will try and increase participation of women aged 16 plus in a recreational setting. So we've also got that link as well. But I think if we can try and get as many people who come to the Amex to watch those international matches to also come to Crawley, then we'll have done a good job.
I think also it helps that, and I think the draw has been made, and I assume that there'll be, well, not so the draw has been made, but certainly the positions have been made. And I understand that if it's one, possibly two England matches will be at Brighton. So the opportunity is stellar, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That was the original plan. We're still firming up the details for the revised plan in 2022, but we're certainly hopeful of having one England game, which will just be absolutely huge for the region, let alone the city and the county.
I understand. I think I read somewhere also, I think it was either UEFA or maybe the government, but I think UEFA also offered a grant to the city of Brighton, or I think it was either the club or the city of Brighton, to have just basically banners everywhere. You know, the way that we had the Rugby World Cup, and I'm talking to the people here that remember how much the city was transformed by the Rugby World Cup coming to Brighton. And what a buzz that was, 2 days in a row, and like I say, probably one of the most astonishing rugby games ever. I think that we're doing the same thing for the city as well. There's banners everywhere and welcome to host city. I mean, like I say, you got your work cut out, Polly, haven't you?
Thankfully, UEFA and the FA are on board to help with that one and lead on those kinds of things. But you're right, city branding makes such a big difference. Yeah. You almost want to make it unavoidable. No. Yeah. Hopefully people can't help but know that the European Championships will be taking place.
Yeah, if you're not going to the game, it's not because you didn't know about it.
Exactly.
Exactly. No, that sounds fantastic. I mean, I guess that probably in that case, that coming to Brighton, I mean, was that in the back of your mind when you applied for the gig?
Yeah, it was definitely a huge positive. Again, that opportunity, because I see it really as a step change in the awareness of the women's team being in the Super League and, you know, playing such high-profile football. I mean, these athletes are just such amazing people. They graft so hard, like, the, you know, to see them go through their gym sessions, to see the work that they do out on the training pitch, speaking to them as individuals. Like, they're such impressive people. Yeah, it was just wanting to support them and give them the best support services around, so that they can perform the best on the pitch come a Sunday or a Wednesday.
Look, no one's listening here, so tell us what it's like working with Hope Powell and Amy Merricks.
Oh, they're brilliant. And, you know, I worked with Hope a bit when I was at the FA.
Yeah.
So I knew what I was getting myself into, let's say. But no, they're great. I mean, such a stalwart of the game and so experienced. Yes, a great opportunity for me to learn from both Hope and Amy. And as I said to Hope in my interview, you know, trying to make sure that I provide the best support to them and the first team players to make sure that they're performing the best on the pitch, and there's no excuses.
Fantastic. Now, as I said at the top of this segment, it's Women's Football Weekend. The men are all clattered across Europe. Those who aren't either injured or just are chickening out of their country's games this weekend. So, Polly, let us know what it is that's going on this weekend.
Well, Women's Football Weekend takes advantage of the men's international break, and there is back-to-back women's football all weekend. So from 12:30 on Saturday through to 4:30 on Sunday, there'll be a live Women's Super League match being streamed for free, and with some matches on BBC and BT Sport as well. Our match is on Sunday against West Ham. It's a 12:30 kickoff, and the match is going to be streamed live on Albion TV. So we'd really encourage as many people to watch that as possible. It's 8th v 9th in the league. We played them last month. It was 2-2 in a really close draw, so I'm expecting another tight one. But it's really an opportunity for the league to try and build audiences, obviously excite existing audiences, but attract new audiences to the game in this sort of window of the break of men's league football. It's an opportunity to showcase the athletes and the talent that there is, and really to engage with fans as well. So we're coming up with some really creative ideas for our social media channels to try and make sure that fans can engage with the club during the match.
I mean, it's one thing that occurs to me here. I mean, and I'll be watching the game. So it's 12:30 on Sunday. And I assume it won't be the London Stadium. They got their own smaller ground to play at.
Yeah, it's Dagenham and Redbridge.
Oh, right. Well, I've been there before. Hey, that was good fun. But it occurs to me that, you know, we've got the politics and the nonsense of fans not being allowed back in the stadium. And this means for any football, up as far as tier 7, it occurs to me that at the very least, experimental matches of the women's game, because, like I said, with all due respect, they're not games that actually attract 30,000-40,000 people, but they are matches where the numbers would actually indicate that the social distancing would be appropriate, and I think is manageable. I mean, of the club, you know, I know that Paul Barber is very much at the forefront of trying to get fans back in the stadium. Has there been a discussion within the women's game to actually try and get people back in the stadium, and how the, I guess, the women's game could be at the forefront of getting that achieved.
Yeah, I think it was actually West Ham Women that did pilot or were planning to pilot a socially distanced fan attending scenario. I can't recall whether that actually went ahead or not, but I think knowing Paul Barber's intent to support this on the men's side, that would absolutely carry over to the women's side as and when safe to do so. So with the absence of fans, we're just trying our very best to engage and keep in contact with fans in the absence of being able to have them at the stadium. But we miss them so much. So we're just trying as much as we can through social media to keep that contact.
So just ahead of wrapping up here, I'd say you've been down here 6 weeks. I noticed that you did a course at University of Brighton earlier in the year. You kind of touched on it earlier, again, at the top of the show. You've got a little bit of a gear crunch in career change. You've gone from, you know, one form of admin to another within women's football. But socially, how are you finding, I guess, albeit closed down city of Brighton and Hove? Are you in Brighton and how are you finding the city? Because, you know, it's got a bit of a reputation of being a bit odd, isn't it?
I wasn't aware of that reputation before I arrived, so no comment there. But so we're 20 minutes north of Brighton Centre. Managed to get out just once onto the sort of seafront. Just a combination of working weekends, bad weather, that kind of thing. But I'm sure it'll come into its own when the weather improves a little bit. But otherwise, a couple of runs in the countryside, which have been great. Looking forward to exploring the South Downs. As well as Brighton City and and really looking forward to exploring some more food options. Like in Switzerland, it's very cheese and dried meats heavy, so to have the missed curry, like, so to get the opportunity for a curry or some Thai food or Mexican, like, yeah, we're really excited about being able to eat more options now.
Fantastic. Well, there's no lack of options in the city, so yeah. So just before we wrap up, just remind everyone who the Albion are playing this weekend.
Yeah, so we're away at West Ham. You can watch on My Albion TV. Kickoff's 12:30. It's 8th against 9th in the league. And we're really looking forward to hopefully picking up 3 points.
Polly Bancroft, Women's and Girls General Manager at Brighton Hove Albion. Thank you very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Roar.
Thanks, Alan. Great to be here. See me smiling, be my night and day.
da 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 da